Hello everyone, and welcome to our latest installment of our campaign, The Keeper of the Dead. We last left off with our group, having recently rescued a member of the Gildenwall, Vanya Brightmore, from goblins. They returned to their quest to locate the dangerous relic known as the Void Scythe of Harrowmane, and they finally reached the edge of what they believe to be their destination. In the process, they encountered the treacherous mercenaries from Vanya's previous adventuring party that betrayed her and left her to die, and only just briefly before they were apparently eviscerated by spectral forces beyond. And as they entered this murky of arcane forces, they encountered two spectral entities known as Byron and Celeste, and the two ghostly figures attempted to dissuade the party from adventuring further, but were ultimately reasoned with and revealed that beyond the edge of their barrier, such as it is, they hid not only the Void Scythe of Harrowmane, but also their son, Nyctis. And as our story continues, they are leading you on through a tunnel, through the murk around you, to their settlement. So as they advance down this tunnel of ghostly, spectral mist on either side, you look off to one side and you see the mercenary that was dragged off. He has been literally ripped in half. Ooh. By some sort of force. He's just completely bisected and kind of tangled up in some brush off to the side. And as you continue walking through this tunnel of mystical energy, you look to either side and you see ghostly figures standing behind its edge. You see a man here, another man here, a woman here, several different people of varying races, all of them kind of dressed in kind of similar garb to the two figures that lead you through. And as you reach the edge of this barrier, bright daylight on the other side. There is no trace of this mystical murk that you had passed through. It's the sun is shining down through the edge of the tree canopy. You crest the top of this hill and you see yourselves in a large clearing at the top of a hill with the vast wood all around it in every side, completely encompassing it. When you were hired for this mission, you were told that there was a ruin here, and kind of when you think of ruin, you picture like one of the many, many centuries old relics of previous civilizations, where just of aged structures. What you see before you looks less like a ruin and more of a destroyed town that was destroyed perhaps several decades ago. You see buildings that looked old, but not ancient. They have, many of them had kind of a stone structure, but most of them are mostly wood. They've been kind of dilapidated over time. Some of them appear to have suffered fire damage or destructive damage of different kinds, but nothing. This entire settlement resembles more of a village that has been gutted on its own to be reclaimed by nature over the course of many years. You continue on. You see, while you were in the field of murk and darkness, you couldn't hear or see any signs of animal life. Here you do. You see off in the distance, you see a little rabbit jump across the field of tall grass. You see birds flying in the air. Way off on the other edge of the wilderness, you see a deer kind of grazing in the grass. You see life here. There's a little tributary creek that goes that probably connects to the river you've been on before at some point. It runs across the top of the hill, and it looks, this entire area, it looks very habitable, surprisingly habitable, and it looks nothing like any of the wilderness you've been through so far. Continue passing by these buildings, these burnt out, these dilapidated buildings, you continue to see more spectral figures come out of them. These ghostly faces, these ghostly apparitions, they kind of come out and watch as you're led to the center of this town, apparently a town of the dead. And at the center of the town, you encounter this larger building. It looks almost like a temple, and it's in much better shape physically.
Yeah.
In the courtyard of the temple, right in front of it, you see what looks to be something like a shrine. And on this shrine, this shrine is unlike the rest of the terrain, the other structures you've seen so far. Completely intact, pristine condition, no sign of decay, no sign of damage. And around it, in every direction, is a perfectly circular scorch mark, as if there was some kind of a barrier here that was bombarded by flame and destruction. It's almost, you see the ground has been dug up around it. It's as if there's sort of a crater, but in the center of it is a perfectly circular space around the shrine of completely untouched ground and terrain. As you approach this temple, you see more ghostly figures standing in front of it. You see an entire town's worth of people of various varieties, various shapes, sizes, species, just an eclectic bunch, but all of them apparently wearing garb of mystical nature, of what you would associate with sorcerers, wizards, druids, basically every imaginable class of magic user you see here in this village.
It's my people.
As you continue, the faces of all the ghostly apparitions just kind of stare at you untrustingly, unemotionally. They just watch as you are led to this temple. The doors of this building have they open of their own accord, apparently, and you are led in by your two figures before you. You see, it's not so much a temple as sort of a almost like a library. You see walls covered in shelves of books, of tomes, of scrolls, of they tower up in the room. This building, it's the largest building in the settlement, still not as big as some of the buildings you'd see in one of the larger cities of the land, but large. And every wall is adorned with scores of books. There are shelves in the middle of the room adorned with books, and all these books are kept in fairly good condition considering the state of the rest of the settlement. You see a little section off to the side has clothes, just clothes tossed off to the side, clean clothes, not left over from some old bit of destruction or anything. It looks like they were just tossed there. Off to the side, you see a few cups, a few plates that have been kind of stacked off to the side where they've been eaten off of recently, but not yet washed. And as you climb this spiraling staircase that leads up to the top room of this building, you're led to a door. And the two figures pause at this door, and they turn to you. And the man once again says, "If any harm befalls our son,
You will die 10,000 deaths.
And then they cautiously, he raises a hand and the door opens on its own. And inside this room, a man, a living man, flesh and blood, looking to be in his early 20s, relatively handsome. He's got kind of spiky hair that's kind of been unkempt a little bit, kind of tousled, blonde-ish, like a dirty blonde kind of hair. Mm-hmm. He's kind of lounging on this sofa, reading a book, and he turns to you, and he just kind of, his eyes go wide, and he like drops the book, stands up, and he says,
"You're people, right?"
Yes, we are.
I look down.
Yeah. We're living.
Yeah, last I checked.
You're living people.
Yes, we're
we are.
Tiny
are they people?
And he like looks to the ghostly figures behind, and he says, "Yes, my son, these are people." And he says, "Oh!" And he runs up and he like offers his hand in a weird kind of like a he holds it out like this, and he grabs one of your hands and he kind of shakes it in a way that looks like he has no idea what he's doing. He's like,
"Hello. My name is Nictus Loth. It's a pleasure to meet you. It's a pleasure to meet anyone ever. But welcome to my home. This is my home. This is our home, actually. This is manners. Would you like something to eat? I've got food and things. Hello. I to be honest, you're the first people I've ever met in my entire life, so I don't know exactly how to do this, but it's so very nice to meet you.
Are you Nictus then?
Yeah, he's Nictus.
Yes. Nictus Loth, that's my name.
Hi there, I'm Hargath.
Hi.
It's a pleasure to meet you.
I'm Savarka. I'm short.
You're very short. You're orange. Are a lot of you orange?
Oh.
Your hair. Is that hair or is there something growing on your head?
No, that's my hair.
Infection? I know those. Is it? Wait. Oh, it's supposed to be. Oh, sorry.
It's supposed to be green. You should see my mom. Purple skin, pink hair. It's really crazy.
That's fantastic. I want to meet her. Is she here? Wait,
never mind. She's not here.
First things first. Hello, the rest of you. And he just kind of like takes you all in, and he's squeeing. Like he's geeking out.
Nictus. Like, can you calm down for a moment, please? Just for a moment.
Oh. Yes.
What happened to this place?
You want me to tell you? Okay. I can tell you all about it. I've been waiting. Oh, I've been thinking about how I'll do this. Well, all right. See, the last wood is about 5,000 years. No, wait. I won't start there. This is a settlement. About 250 years ago, a group of human and elven and dwarven and gnomish and a group of various magic users decided to get together and start a little enclave where they would just study magical practice and magical theory. And they came here and they brought all these tomes, all the other books you see downstairs. They came here just to study magic, just to be away from civilization, to just learn about magic, to learn how to use it, learn how it works, learn new forms of magic, learn all sorts of things. And they did. And they stayed here for 250 years. And then, about
About 20 years ago, a little longer, about as old as I am, a sorcerer named Haramain came to our enclave. Don't know how he found it, but he did. And he came seeking knowledge. He wanted to join our pursuits. He was the first outsider since we established the settlement, I suppose. He wanted to learn about magic, and at first we welcomed him in. And then it turned out he wanted to learn some things he shouldn't, and he wanted them for the wrong reasons. And he was a very powerful necromancer and a very powerful user of dark magic, very dark magic. When my parents, he met them, when they found out what he was about, they told him to leave and return to civilization. They weren't going to give it to him. They weren't going to give him what he wanted. They were afraid of what he'd use it for. He did not like that. So he decided he would take it for himself. They wouldn't let him, so he took to fighting them. And it was an entire village, 300-something people. And they were going to fight him. He couldn't, as powerful as he was, and he was more powerful than any one of our practitioners, he wasn't able to take them all on at once, so he cheated. Created a magical plague. A curse that would sweep through the village and kill everyone indiscriminately. No cure.
That's terrible. So how did you survive?
Well, that's just it. I was only a little infant at the time. My parents and a few of the more powerful mages managed to combine their power to create a magic nullification field on the shrine you saw outside this building. They put me on it, created this powerful barrier that would protect it from any harmful magical effects, and they held it steady with their own life force. They kept it strong, and in the process of doing so, Haramain tried once again to push his way through, and he was killed in the process. He was slain and bound to his own scythe, his soul trapped in it. Anyway, in the process, the plague continued to work after his death, and even as it continued to eat away at my parents and the other leaders of the commune, gave everything they had to maintaining the effect of the shield to protect me. So they died, but I lived, and they managed to hold it long enough for the curse to work its course and to pass on. So at the end of the day, the curse dissipated. Haramain was slain and bound his soul forever to that scythe. Everyone else in the commune was dead, except for me. But fortunately, before they all died, the most powerful members of the commune were able to focus their effects, their attention on their own necromantic abilities, and managed to force their souls to linger past death. They stayed in spectral form. So they were able to protect me as I was not even a year old at the time. They raised me from beyond the grave, as it were. They taught me to speak. They taught me to learn from all the books downstairs to become a bit of a powerful sorcerer of my own.
And they taught me how to talk to the dead, how to amplify the connection to them from beyond the grave. So I'm a bit of a powerful necromancer myself. And they taught me how to hunt, how to garden, how to survive in the wilderness, and to just do all sorts of things. And I've been living here myself with them that whole time, and you're the first people I've ever seen with flesh and bone on them, and it's so cool.
Well, unfortunately, we're not here under a happy occasion.
Socialization now.
There's a man in the city that wants the scythe of Harriman, and we're afraid he's going to get it. He sent us to find it, and after I spoke to your parents, or we spoke to your parents, we believe that we were on the wrong side of this, and so we have to figure out what to do, because he's going to send better and stronger and more people.
Keep coming.
They'll keep coming for it, and eventually for you, if you stand in the way. So we need to figure out what to do.
What's this?
A ponce. A man with money. Nothing more.
Power hungry.
Man, what does he do? What?
He's a nobleman. And we think that he's going to try to leverage that scythe to get himself more political power.
Do you have any idea what it can do?
I don't think he does.
That scythe can bring unlife to any corpse in reach and keep it that way as long as it remains held in the possession of whoever runs it, and it also contains the soul of Haramain. It could potentially be released from it.
So the question is, first, how is it protected here? I understand these spirits are probably very strong, but is there anything more than that keeping the scythe from reaching the outside world?
Me? I mean, there's the disembodied souls of some 200 plus powerful wizards and witches and every manner of magic user you could think of. There's not much stronger force than that I can think of, but then again, I've never been anywhere else in my entire life, so what do I know? That's what I've read. I've read a lot, but I like to think I'd be rather scrappy in a fight. I've fought some pretty tough creatures in the woods before.
I bet you would.
Have you ever thought about destroying it?
Well, if you destroy it, that releases Haramain's soul along with all the necromantic energy it's ever collected over the course of its entire existence.
Oh, well, that sucks.
There may be a way to do it, I just don't know what it is, and I've got access to pretty much all the information that could ever tell you how, so...
Are you telling us that you've read every one of these books, tomes, and scrolls?
I've read... At last count, I read about 4,500 of them.
You've certainly got a lot of time on your hands.
I do, I really do. I didn't have anything else to do with my life. I've tried writing my own stuff here and there. It's pretty good, I think. But I've tried making my own clothes before. It's not easy. I don't have access to a lot of textiles. I sometimes try to sing. I'm told it's bad, but
that's okay. Most people can't.
Yeah. It's hard when the only people who can train you don't have their own vocal cords anymore. So it doesn't work as well, I would assume. But what do you do?
What is Vanya's reaction to all this?
Yeah, I was wondering about that too.
She's been very
awfully quiet.
She's been thinking pensively this entire time, just listening to what he said, and like as he said that what about the nature of what the Void Scythe can do, you notice a visible look of concern
creep over her face, and she says, Rukyo, as antiquarian of Gildenwald, has two responsibilities. His primary responsibility is to guard and preserve a vault of magical items. Mm-hmm. His secondary responsibility is to keep and watch over the city's catacombs.
Oh.
The entire city's catacombs.
So he has a big army.
So he has motivation for wanting something that will bring every dead body.
I fear if he acquires this void scythe, he will instantaneously have an army of thousands.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the convenient thing about being a necromancer. For every one living body, there's 10 dead ones.
Yes. I think we need to put an end to Rukyo.
Agreed.
We need suggesting...
proof that he's bad and that he's after this and that this is his end game. Yeah. But I'm wondering if his wooden man might have a few clues for us.
I think Davenport's the only person that we can probably trust there.
It is entirely possible that Davenport is completely under Rukyo's control.
It's...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just, what's the game plan? We walk in, we point fingers, and we say, hey, guess what? We think that you're going to be a necromancer when you grow up.
We have to take something. We have to have something with us to prove this story. Right now, something or someone with us to prove this story, that this is what this weapon does and that it is protected here and needs to remain here. We can't just go back and start throwing accusations around because, as Vanya pointed out...
What if we just go back and say it's all a story and that everybody else died? To the dangers of the swamp.
What would stop him from sending another party out that's bigger and more powerful?
Nothing necessarily, but if we tell a good story, maybe he'll believe it.
I mean,
seems that Rukyo knows enough about the Void Scythe to know it's worth his time getting it. And if he knows that much about the Void Scythe, he probably knows it's real and that it's here.
Yeah, if he's the antiquarian and he's studied and he's done, you know, how much research to send us here in the first place.
Well, unfortunately, there is no proof here that would...
There's Nikus.
Yes, but that doesn't prove that Rukyo is acting on bad faith, is there? His job is to be the antiquarian and to get a hold of these things and then put them on the wall.
Yeah, I mean, what's to stop him from hiring his own necromancer and coming back here and taking control of all of these ghosts?
Well, my thought right now is that the entire reason the mercenaries betrayed me in the wilderness wasn't for their own gain. It was probably their orders. They were probably ordered to eliminate anybody who could officially corroborate their attempted coup.
Yeah.
Are you above reproach, Vanya?
I would hope so. I'm loyal to the city and to the king.
If you were to tell the king that you thought that this is what was happening, do you think he'd believe it? Or do you think he would say it was
your
thing?
I think if we can bring a witness to what this Void Scythe can do and the nature of the magic within.
Nikus, do you have a book or a journal of some kind that you've kept this story in?
I have a 12-volume set.
I mean, and is it too much to hope that your extended family takes prisoners, or is that too much to hope for?
They're pretty protective of me, I have to say. I was a little miffed. I heard they killed some people, and I was like, why'd you do that? I wanted to meet them. And they said, those are bad people. And I was like, but I wanted to meet some people I never got to before. And they were like, no, they're bad people. And I was like, oh, come on, Dad. And it was like, whatever. But so they killed a lot of people. And I could talk to them still.
I can do that, but it's just not that interesting to talk to people who don't want to be awake when they're dead. Oh, people who do want to be awake when they're dead are much better conversations.
Whoa, back up. What if you were to talk to the people that they killed today that we believe are...
That's exactly what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
Well, why would I want to do that? I could, but it's boring.
We need to find out it. We need to find out what their orders were.
Mm-hmm. We need to find details. They would be proof.
So it's an investigation. It's detective work. I've read some of those books. Those are my favorite. All right, let's go do that.
So we need to go ahead and get them talking.
Will your mother and father allow you to leave this building?
Well, yeah, they'll let me go anywhere I want. They advise against it, and they're very protective. Well, I'm not prisoner in here. Right, so, Dad? And then the man turns and says, yes, my son, but please don't be out too late.
I'm going to set a curfew.
All right, Dad, I won't be out too late.
Actually, I prefer it if your father and your mother came with us.
All right, Dad, Mom, can you come with? And the father says, yes, my son, we will come.
Can we take the volumes with us of the books, or maybe a couple of them?
Oh, sure. I'll go and get them. And he hops off the couch and he runs down to one of the bookshelves, and he starts piling them up. And he carries this big stack of books towards you. He's like, here you go. It's the story of my entire life up to this point. Last I checked, he was about 800,000 words, give or take. Lots of them.
I take it you've never heard
of an editor. Better than handwriting. What's that?
I take it you've never heard of an editor.
I've heard of editors. They usually have their names written on the front couple pages of the book. I never quite figured out what they're for.
Seems convincing the story.
Right.
Well, I don't think there's much you could really cut out in my story. It's pretty essential stuff. I wouldn't really want anybody to miss anything important. But anyway, there you go.
Either way. All right. Which volume specifically contains the part about the necromancer?
Yeah. And then what the void scythe does.
That would probably be the fourth one. The rest is all about the cities, history, and everything like that. I think that's the one where he shows up. Yeah, that's the one where he shows up.
All right.
Okay, let's take that one.
Pretty much entirely devoted to him.
Okay.
All right.
We'll take that one.
That'll
draw.
The rest are really good, though.
But we'll come back and read it later for you.
All right.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure we'll be epic.
That's fair. Shall we go talk to the dead person?
Yes. Let's go talk to the dead guy.
There's two of them, actually.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes, Lord Byron.
Hayes.
Yeah, Lord Byron, can you take us to the bodies of the men that you slew today?
Follow me. And he kind of drifts back out of the building, and you go down the stairs, and you go back outside, and all the figures outside are still kind of waiting. They're just watching you all cautiously. And he carries you back down to where you'd come in. Notice the mist has entirely dissipated. There is no longer this murk. You get the idea that it was sort of a defensive mechanism they deployed specifically when they sensed the approach of outsiders. You find the extremely mangled body of Vicnin just in two separate pieces lying on the ground, just guts everywhere. Mm-hmm. Nick is like, oh, so that's what they look like on the inside.
Yep. Most of us.
That's really interesting. That's a lot of intestines.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got plenty of books on human anatomy back in the world of the living. So,
all right, I've read a few of those, but I've never seen any with pictures. So that's really interesting. Shall I speak with this lad?
Please do.
Yes.
Yes.
Right. He kind of casts his hand out towards the figure, and you
watch as he kind of just, his eyes close. He holds his hand above the mangled corpse. And with a pull, suddenly, he pulls back, and you see a spectral version of this figure rise up from the bifurcated mangle of flesh and stand before you, eyes kind of glazed, standing and kind of staring into nothingness as he is set before you. And Nyx is like, here you go. This one's Vicknan. What would you like me to ask this fella?
What were his orders?
Vicknan, what were your orders?
And the figure says,
I was sent to retrieve the Void Scythe and kill anything that was alive at the location. My orders were also to eliminate any members of the city guard before returning.
Fantastic. And who gave you those
orders? I can ask him two more questions.
Two more questions.
Who gave him those orders?
Who gave you those orders?
He says,
my orders come directly from Rukyor the Antiquarian. I answer to him. I was hired by him. No one else knows of my involvement in this mission.
So, Rukyor is working on his own. He wasn't working with anybody in... Wait, I'm not asking this question. I don't want to be the person responsible for the last question. I'm saying to you guys.
Yeah.
Just to clarify.
Yeah, this confirms what we suspected.
Right. But he's working outside of orders himself.
Outside the law. Yeah.
Right.
He's conducting his own independent investigation.
Yes.
I mean, do we want to go ahead and ask him if... Or what Rukyor's plans are?
He might not know them, but I suppose we could ask. Do we want that to be our last question? Is there anything else that we would need to know?
I mean, and while it's great for us to go ahead and have that, and have this confirmation, like this hardly constitutes as proof. We can't get.
Well, right. I mean, we don't have a recorder.
Yeah.
We could ask him. If he knows how we can prove that.
Oh, well, there you go.
That would be good. If there's proof, if there's something in the world or some way we can prove his involvement and his plan. That
there's still the second guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
There is still the second guy. We could go ahead theoretically and, you know, drag his corpse all the way back.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
This one would have been a better one because there's only half of him.
It would have been.
You would have been only a backpack to carry.
Yep.
What shall my last question for this fella be?
Is there proof, and is that what we want? I think that makes more sense because I don't think he knows the bigger plans. I mean, he'd just know what he needed to know what his orders were.
Yeah. So, how can we prove beyond the shadow of a doubt
Rukyor's plan?
Of what Rukyor's plans were.
How can we prove beyond a shadow of a doubt what Rukyor's plans were?
He says,
still have the contract.
Oh.
Oh,
was supposed well, that's to handy. Destroy it.
Oh no, now we have to find it, and we didn't ask him where it is.
It's probably on his body.
Yeah.
Let's
look at the body.
The spectral figure begins to dissipate, and Nick just says, bye, Vicknan! And he kind of just fades.
Oh, Nickus. Such a all fanboy. Right.
Well, let's go ahead and I'm looting the body already.
Okay.
Intestines and all. It's great.
You search the upper half, you don't find anything. You search the bottom half, you find in his pants pocket, you find a bloody, crumpled piece of parchment that has a contract written out on it that does specifically state not only to retrieve the Void Scythe, but to eliminate any members of the City Guard in their company before the end of their mission.
He wrote that down. I'm glad.
Fantastic.
All right.
And it's got Rukior's seal on it?
Yep.
All right.
What an idiot.
He deserves to be taken down.
All right. So, back to home, I guess?
Well,
you're leaving.
We have to make sure to protect you.
Yes, that's what we told your parents we would do.
But I see no reason why we cannot stay here for the day, the rest of the day and the night before we leave.
Agreed, especially if you have food for us.
We would love to taste your home cooking.
All right. I've never had guests before. All right. Settle down. There's a little house that's still got some furniture in it. I'll set you up with that. I'll go do some preparations.
Why can't we stay in your home?
Because it's only got the one bed.
Because
I burned some of the rest of the furniture for kindling when I got lazy and didn't feel like looking for wood in the woods. But I left one just in case. I thought someday's here. So I'll set you down with that, and I'll get to forage up some herbs and get some food. And give me like an hour, and it'll all be ready.
All right, sounds good.
Freya, isn't that something that you could help the boy with?
Help with what?
With fire.
Well, help him find herbs and.
And fire.
Yes, look for the fire under the rock.
She rolled a 20 to make fire.
That's true.
Yeah, I could go help him.
Okay.
Maybe scrounge up an animal or two for some meat.
He's super excited when you make the offer, and he gets really excited. And so he sets the rest of you down in this one house that is still relatively reasonably furnished. Dust everywhere, and some of the furniture has begun to decay just from age and neglect, but it's still relatively decent accommodations. He prepares a meal with your help, and you settle down for a decent meal. It's not the best. You get the idea that he's kind of self-taught most of his cooking ability.
Nobody would teach him how to flavor anything because he doesn't have anybody else to taste anything anymore.
A lot of the food just has kind of an odd taste. Like, he uses seasonings that make no sense to go with the things that he's putting them on. But so it's
sage and cardamom together. It's like, it's just a big
and it wreck. Smells better than the dog meat that the goblins left behind, right?
Horse meat.
Oh yeah,
horse
and it's meat. Definitely horse prepared meat, with care. It's prepared with care, and it's well presented. It has that kind of a dorm room leftovers kind of a meal feel to it, where stuff's kind of thrown together. That's just what he had. That doesn't have any presentational sense to it, but he still tries to make it as nice as possible. And all in all, it's not as good as the Gold Meadows, but it's pretty good food. And you definitely appreciate how much work he's putting into trying to impress you guys with his first ever shared meal with other human beings or other gnomes and dwarves.
Sounds good to me.
So you settle in. The night passes. The next morning arrives. And you're ready to begin your day.
I would like to go speak to Byron.
Okay. You find him easily enough. This entire time, neither of Nyxus's parents has strayed very far from him. They're keeping a very close watch on him, so you find him relatively easily.
Byron, I have a very strange request, sir. Would it be
possible, have you?
Would it be possible to gather the rest of your ghostly village together in one area? I would very much like to see how strong you are as far as being able to protect the site.
He nods.
I would do this by using Detect Undead. I would be curious to see how powerful you all are together.
Okay. He nods, and he kind of just looks at some of the figures standing nearby, and it's as if almost as if a telepathic exchange has passed between them, and an understanding is reached without words. And you see ghostly figures come from all directions. You see individuals phase through walls and walk towards you. You see other figures kind of rise up from the ground. You see many, many figures kind of coalesce together into this ghostly, transparent crowd. And you can feel the air charge with energy. You feel this electricity in the atmosphere, and you sense the magic of this collection rise as they coalesce into one cluster. And through your detect magic ability, you sense these are all the souls of extremely magically powerful people. They're diminished in their undead state. They're reduced in what they can do. Are much more powerful than any specter you would expect to find under any other circumstance. They're collectively very powerful.
So I get the idea that the site is in the safest place it could possibly be on the planet.
It is in a very safe place. It may not be the safest place, and it is conceivable that the right force could breach these defenses, and that there are particular weaknesses that are intrinsic to undead that could be exploited, considering that the entire population is undead.
Right. I mean, an army of high-level clerics and paladins could probably cause them a big headache. But
a very specialized task force could overcome them. Mm-hmm. Without the same level of difficulty, but it would take something like that.
And they would have to know about it, and we're not going to tell them.
Yeah. Anyway. It is definitely above the typical mercenary troop.
Okay.
Even elite ones would have difficulty with this.
Sounds awesome.
So after I do this, I thank them and look to my party, and I explain to them, while this, I don't think that this is necessarily the safest place that the Void Scythe could rest, it is probably one of the safest places. And that to get to the Void Scythe, a very specific army of people would have to come here to breach this.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, fellow adventurers, that we should swear ourselves to secrecy. And not let anybody know exactly what guards this place. Or maybe we don't even need to go as far as to tell them that we ever found it in the first place, since we now have the contract showing what Rukior intended all along.
That's exactly the best story. We made it very far into the woods. We happened upon the bodies of these men, and we found the contract, and we turned right around.
Yeah, they can't fight what they don't know about.
Right. And they can't.
I will happily corroborate that.
Okay.
All right, then. And I will tell Byron and Nyctis that this is what our plan is.
All right. I have a request of you.
Sure.
He wants to come with us.
Can I come with you?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that would be wise, Nyctis. What would we tell people? And do you think you could honestly keep your identity to yourself?
I would hope so. I'm really good in a fight. I fought trolls. I fought all sorts of things.
If your parents will allow it.
Right.
It's not up to us, it's up to them.
Because we told them we'd protect you. That was what our promise to get us here was that we would not put you in harm's way.
Mom.
Money.
Can I go with them? And then Celeste looks at him with kind of a forlorn look and says, "Son, we can only protect you for so long. I think it was inevitable that this day would come. I think it is time for you to experience the world outside this place. I give my blessing that you leave." And then Byron says, "Son, I agree. It's time, I think, for you to let us go." And then Nictus kind of smiles and a mixture of happiness and sadness and says, "I'll come visit. We'll talk. Adventures. It's gonna be great. You'll be so proud.
I plan to come back."
"Well, all right then. I'll
pack a bag.
Other things. Mm-hmm. I've got a bag already ready just in case of something like
bring
this.
A weapon.
I'll put some clean underwear in there. And I've got a staff. It's a nice staff. I'll be ready. So.
And any food you have left over, we should take with us.
I'll bring some food." And then he runs back into the house, and he you hear kind of a shuffling of things being like thrown haphazardly around inside. And he comes back not 5 minutes later with this big heavy rucksack over his back, and he has a staff in his other hand. He's like, "Let's go."
I turn to Byron and Celeste. "You realize that we cannot guarantee his safety beyond your borders. I mean, I will personally do anything I can to protect him, but we can't say that he will not come to harm out in the world."
Celeste nods and says, "Every parent wishes to keep their child from all harm, but there comes a time for every parent to allow a child to find their own way. I think we may have kept him too safe for too long."
"All right. Well, I will bring him back if I can."
"Thank you. That's all we can ask." So, are you ready to embark forth back to from whence you came?
Yes.
As ready as will ever be.
Let's do it.
All right. So you get all your things ready. You begin your embarkment out onto the path you traversed on your way here. And you watch behind you as the massive crowd of ghostly figures kind of line up watching you all depart. Their eyes never straying from Nictus as he passes out of their sight slowly. And then as you continue onward, you watch as they all gradually fade from visibility to invisibility behind you. We will find out what happens next in our next episode.